Let's think of an interesting way to start the podcast.
Something interesting.
Can't think of... No.
No, I've got nothing.
Oh, hang on. I can tell you something. Do you want me to tell you something?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know how...
Did you like how we didn't even ask whether it was going to be interesting? We just jumped on it.
OMG. LOL. ITS. THE FWP.
You know how I was talking last week about having become completely paralysed by the sheer amount of stuff that I've given myself to write?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I thought I'd take David Quantick's advice.
And quit writing.
And quit writing altogether. And that's the end of my story. Anyone else? No, I've reprioritised my writing list, my to-do list.
Oh, his ladder.
Yeah, I'm using the ladder. And it seems to have helped. Yeah. I've actually been writing again. I've written the love story, and I was doing quotation marks with my fingers there. I don't know if you could hear that. I'll do that again. See if you can spot them. I've done the love story.
I think people understand when they hear our love
stories. Yeah, that's why I did it.
Yeah.
So not really love stories. I've done that, and I've also written some more murder mystery as well.
Oh, wonderful.
Not very much, admittedly. But
Do you know what? Perhaps that might have been the most helpful episode ever, because I also took some of David Quantick's advice.
Ooh, what was your takeaway?
Well, I was really struggling with the romance thing, and he was talking about, you know, if you don't sit there trying to force ideas out, just go for a walk. And he said he walks his dog, and we took the ridiculous decision to get a dog this year. So I thought, I'll take the dog for a walk.
I thought you were going to say you walked David Quantick's dog, and that's where I was taking it too.
Didn't pay me anything for it, but I took the dog for a walk. And I was walking around the local graveyard, and it was a beautiful sunny day, and you know, birds twittering and crickets in the... And I suddenly was hit by inspiration as he was dragging me through the grass. I didn't actually write my romance story, but I did write a little poem, a little ode to my dog. Do you want to hear it?
What? As you were walking?
As I was walking. Do you want to hear my little dog poem?
Yeah.
Yeah, please.
Right. Okay. This is Ode to Rufus. Oh, you little bastard. You stupid little prick. Every time I look at you, it makes me feel quite sick. Don't eat that. Put that down. Please don't hump my friends. If it's true, a dog's for life. I'm praying that mine ends. There we go. The inspiration hit me.
That's
so,
really good, man.
Thanks.
Nice.
David Quantick.
How lovely.
I think David Quantick would approve of that.
He'd be proud that he's brought that out.
So that so the whole dog thing's going quite well at the moment.
In terms of poetry.
What did the dog think of that?
Turned his nose up at it.
Right.
To be honest.
Yeah. Well, it was quite an attack on him, wasn't it? On his existence.
Yeah. Anyway, I think there's somebody in the waiting room.
Oh, is there?
Janice, can you hear us?
Hello. Yeah, I can. Can you hear me?
We can. How are you doing?
Oh, fantastic. Thank you. I'm doing great.
Marvelous.
I'm excited to be speaking with you. And
oh, don't be too excited.
I am. And thanks for having me on. When I was invited to Failing Writers, I'm not sure I was flattered or insulted.
Well, that is...
You're not the first.
Yeah, it's a recurring theme. Yeah.
Let's see how you feel afterwards, shall we?
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, we always say it's us that's failing.
Yes, make it clear to our listeners, we're the Failing Writers, and we want non-failing writers such as yourself, Janice.
Thank you. I feel better already.
There we go. Help us along the path.
Well, you did mention, actually, in the email, you did say that you like to chat to successful writers to see how they pulled it off so you can shamelessly replicate their success. And to be honest, I don't see any problem in that. I did it too.
Good. So who are you replicating?
Well, when I first started doing Kindle, you know, self-publishing on Kindle, now we're going right back to the very beginning, 2011, it was all brand new. And and I wanted to self-publish. I had a publishing deal with my first book, and the publisher had gone defunct. So I had my second book ready, and I wondered what to do with it. So when Kindle came along, there weren't that many people doing it. And number one on the Kindle chart was a romance novel. And I thought, right, how did they do it? So I actually contacted the author, and we're still friends to this day. And just to find out exactly what it took to get on the number one spot. So I've done the same thing. I definitely shamelessly have you know, tried to replicate that success.
Wow. So it does actually work.
It does work. It does work.
So
yeah.
What did you learn from this person then, Janice? What were the top tips that you wheedled out of?
I like
them?
How you said learn rather than steal, Dave. That was good. That was nice. That was
very diplomatic.
I like that.
Yeah. Let me think. Oh gosh, we're going back a bit. But yeah, I just really wanted to know what they'd done, you know, to get to the number one spot. But I think it was a lot easier then. I'm not being mean to that person, but because there wasn't that much competition. Now it's just so hard, isn't it? It's really hard to get noticed at all, and just putting a book up on Kindle these days, unless you're going to do some marketing on social media, because again, the people that read Kindles are generally people that are online. So you have to reach out using the right channels, and I think maybe that's what I learned, that you have to be partners in writers groups and supportive networks so that you can get the word out, really.
Yeah, it's definitely something we've learned doing this podcast from not really knowing much about sort of self-publishing and independent publishing, that writing the book is probably about 20-25% of the gig and pretty much the rest
is
admin and marketing stuff.
Yeah. And the last thing you want is to come over as like somebody who's saying, buy my book.
Well, there's quite a lot of people out there that do that.
Yeah, but it doesn't work, actually.
It's a little bit annoying, isn't it?
You've got to be entertaining. Yeah. I mean, that's what people buy the books for, isn't it? To be, especially romance novels, they want to be inspired and romanced and be entertained. And if you can provide that in your marketing, then I think you're halfway there already.
Yeah, you've got to have an interesting story, haven't you, behind you, I think, as a person, apart from
do that quite shamelessly.
But that brings me on to you, Janice. Because the first time I saw you mentioned as the backpacking housewife, I just assumed that you went travelling a lot. I didn't actually realise the extent to which you're committed to your alias. So could you tell us how you live now and how it all came about?
This is our, I want to say our, it's my backpacking husband and myself. It's our ninth year, including the 2 years where we were sort of grounded by COVID, but we're into our ninth year and we're traveling again. So 9 years ago, almost, we sold everything. We were empty nesters. Our three sons had gone off to university and weren't coming back. They were happy pursuing their own careers and being independent of us. And so we decided we wanted to travel, and we didn't have a great deal in savings and stuff like that. So we thought, right, okay, let's sell everything. So we did. We sold everything.
And when you said,
house, our cars.
Yeah. You literally mean everything, don't you? Pretty much.
Yeah.
A handful of items that are dear to you, and then everything else.
I mean, a lot of people just call that a midlife crisis, Janice.
Yeah, and some people did. Friends were worried about us.
Yeah, it is a little bit extreme, isn't it? It's on the kind of the end of the scale of,
exactly. But we weren't fazed. We just thought, this is a bit of an adventure for us. So, we sold everything and off we went. And we went to the Caribbean, and we went around the Caribbean for quite a while, and then off to Asia and pretty much everywhere. I went around the world twice before the COVID thing happened, and we went back to Scotland, which is our home place. And as soon as we could, which was February of this year, we booked a flight and off we went. And here I am now. I'm actually on the other side of the world from you. So
where are you right now then?
We're just off the coast of Honduras in Central America. It's in the Caribbean. Wow. And we're on this little island, traveling again, and it feels good, I can tell you. But with your question about the backpacking housewife, me sort of being that person came first. I was the backpacking housewife, and then I wrote the series, The Backpacking Housewife.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, it was the other way around, actually.
Yeah, because I'm guessing a lot of the stories came out of the travel.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was my inspiration, really. The story is entirely fictional. It's a romance novel, and I suppose you could call it a second chance at love story. So it's an older woman, a bit like myself. But of course, I'm happily married and travel with my husband. And in this situation in The Backpacking Housewife, that's not the case. But of course, I had to give her that second chance at love opportunity. And so she had to ditch that husband. Or rather, he ditched her.
Yes, it makes it for a more content, happy settled people don't make for particularly interesting characters, I suppose, do they? There's got to be, you know, something going on.
Yeah, that's it. But, you know, people identify with her, with Laurie in the story. And that's what I really love about being a writer most. When you get messages and letters and emails from people who've read the books and felt not only inspired by them, but that they themselves can take something from it that means that they can have a second chance at life and an adventure, because my books, I call them romantic adventure stories.
Yeah, they sound like an interesting take on romance, in that they're not necessarily a sort of your traditional woman is completed by man. They're more like stories of self-discovery and self-love.
Yeah, there's adventure.
And I suppose obviously all your travels inform the painting of the worlds that you use in your books then.
Yeah.
So do you is that a brilliant excuse to go, right, well, we're going to have to go to insert location I've always wanted
exactly.
to go to.
Let's go to the Seychelles.
Yeah.
And let's explore pearl farms for my next book, yeah, that kind
exactly.
of thing.
Exactly. Yeah. I like that. So where do you writing? Is it all, I've got an image of it's all just beautiful white beaches and just kind of sat there with your laptop
Imagine.
Underneath a palm tree. Is that about right?
No. Brushing sand.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's not. It's hard work, isn't it, writing? It's a job. So I've been writing for a long time. And so I've always sort of been scraping out bits of time to write. But then when I got my contract with HarperCollins, I had deadlines. I had a short time to write these books. So I decided that I needed to settle down for a while because it wasn't working. We were in Vietnam at the time I decided this. And I think people must have thought it was a bit strange because my husband, poor guy, had to go out on his own sightseeing and doing things while I stayed in my room. And, you know, what people thought, what's that strange woman having breakfast and then going back up to her room and staying there all day. But that's what it was like. And so we decided when I got this contract with HarperCollins that we would settle down. And it was my husband actually came up with a brilliant idea of house sitting. So we signed up to a house sitting website and we got a wonderful, wonderful job to look after a chateau in France.
Oh, that's not bad, is it?
No. So we stayed there for 2 years. This was just pre-Brexit when you could do things like that.
You sat a house for 2 years.
And this is free. This is for free.
For free.
You are just house sitting.
For free.
Wow.
My husband, he managed the chateau. It had a couple of jeets, you know, with people rental jeets. It had a swimming pool, big grounds, and of course the house itself. So he was sort of a property manager.
Did you know it was going to be 2 years?
No, not really.
I imagine like when you start, like someone calls you around to babysit and they've gone for 2 years and you're still there.
And you just go, well, they'll be back. I'm sure they'll be back soon.
they'll be back before you go to university, Johnny. Don't worry.
It was a bit like that. So we settled down there and I started writing. And that's where I wrote the first two books. And we did a little break in that 2 years, to be honest. We went off and did a little bit of traveling while I got sort of the ideas for the third book. And then we went back to France after that. So it really was my writing place and my inspiration. But it was hard work. It was hard work.
Yeah. On to writing. You are good at writing love stories. But what is it, do you think, makes a good love story, in your opinion,
Dennis? Well, you've got to have a happy ending. Maybe, you know, even if you don't know what's going to, where you go to through the journey. But it's essentially a story of two people falling in love. And you've got to have obstacles, obviously, in the way to that. And, you know, powerful motive, really, for the love story and for why these people can't be together. But ultimately, the recipe for it, if you think there is one, is there must be a happy ending.
Okay.
Is that very much driven by your sort of readers? Would they just not accept anything other than a
indeed
happy
ending, yeah. I mean, that's why they buy the books.
Is that what people read a romance for?
They want to fall in love with your characters and they want to feel empathy and emotional connection and they want to be taken on a romantic journey. So that they've got that feel-good factor at the end of it.
Yeah.
It's amazing as well, when you start looking into the genre, there are so many subgenres. And then, like, subgenres within those as well. There's, like, I can't think of any now, but, like, forbidden romance. And what else is there? Can you think of any more?
Well, yeah, there's...
Don't help him, Janice. Just, I just want to hear John come up with some genres of romance.
Well, there's
off
so
the top
many.
Of his head.
There's so many. I mean, a story with a romantic, you know, element of it is a romantic fiction. There's contemporary romantic fiction, which is what I write. Mm. Erotic fiction.
That's Tom's
fantasy.
Stuff there.
Historical, young adult, paranormal, yeah. Romantic comedy, of course, romantic suspense. I could go on. There's so many under the umbrella of romance.
Wow. It's a very lucrative market, isn't it, romance?
Well, yeah.
I was reading it makes up about a third of all book sales. It's like $1 billion a year.
Wow. Yeah.
In America.
Well,
alone,
last year, I read that romance books topped 47 million books sold last year.
Whoa.
So, okay. You know, romance readers are passionate about reading.
Yeah, definitely.
So what was it that first attracted you to the lucrative world of romance fiction? Were you always...
It's just my thing.
Was that always your thing? That's what you always had a sort of passion to write?
Yeah, a love story. Yeah, the first book I wrote, which was 20 years ago, my first book, it took me 4 years to write it. And yeah, it was essentially a forbidden romance type thing.
Mm. And what's that called?
Oh, When We First Love. It's not actually for sale anymore. It's sort of like a backlist one. And my first book. It was a long haul job because my children were very small at the time. So it was literally finding time and, you know, the odd 5 minutes in the day.
Children ruin everything, don't
they? So that's why it took me so long to write it, four years.
How do you feel looking back at that book now, with everything else sort of under your belt? Do you feel that what's your journey as a writer been? Do you feel that you've come a long way? And do you look back upon that first book with sort of pride, or do you think that you would do it very
differently?
That's
why it's not for sale anymore, Dave. She's got
35,000
copies in a lockup, so no one else can buy it.
It was actually published. It was my first book, and it was published by a publisher, taken up straight away. So that was a bit strange, really. After all the hard work, I submitted it, and it got published. And well, I suppose you expect that, don't you, with your first book? You're a bit naive. but it did get published, and I had a big launch party. Looking back on it, I think there was a lot wrong with it in the respect of I'm a better writer now than I was then, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But a publisher did see promise in it. But unfortunately, although it inspired me to get straight on with book two, which took me 2 years, that publisher went defunct. So that's when I started looking at other ways to be published. And after a few years of writing more and more and more books, that's when Kindle came along and I decided, you know what, I'm just going to self-publish. And I did so, to be honest, quite successfully, because I took it very seriously. I'd learned a lot from the first book, so I took it very seriously and I did self-publish, perhaps at a time when it wasn't that acceptable, but I just thought, nah, I'm going to do it. I'm a businesswoman, you know?
Yeah. So they were solely Kindle?
They're available in paperback as well, but through KDP, Amazon. Yeah. I'm exclusive to Amazon because I also have the Kindle Unlimited as well, which the sales from that are quite good too.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So I would encourage people to self-publish. I don't think there's anything wrong with that whatsoever. It's certainly become more acceptable now. In fact, so many of my author friends are self-publishing, or indeed what they call hybrid, which is like me now, where I'm published through a publisher and I self-publish.
Before that first book that you wrote, had you been sort of writing other things? Was writing always a sort of big passion of yours, or did you just suddenly go, I'm going to write a book?
I'd thought about writing a book for a long time and, you know, just went and put the kettle on.
Do you know what? I'm very familiar with that.
But I was a reader, an avid reader. I mean, even from being a child and then a teenager, Jackie Collins books, Julie Cooper, all those, you know, I loved them when I was sort of...
As a child?
No, that was Enid Blyton. But I progressed onwards to the dizzy heights of Julie Cooper novels. And I'd always wanted to write, but I think perhaps my mum even said to me, when are you ever going to write that book that you're always talking about writing?
Yeah.
And then I eventually did, I started. But that wasn't till... 2000, I started writing. So it's a long time. It's not been like an overnight thing to get published. But I persevered with it and realized that I really liked it. I liked doing it.
So after, because you had, I mean, that's a massively successful start, isn't it? Like you said, that kind of perhaps didn't give you a very real view of how it is actually meant to work.
No.
Oh, I've written a book. Oh, it's been published. Yeah. Right then.
Well, what happened was once I got published and it was in the newspapers locally and stuff like that, a writer that lived local to me that I didn't know contacted me and said, oh, if it's a romance book, you should really join the Romantic Novelists Association. And I'd not heard of them. So if any of your listeners here have not heard of them and they want to write romance novels, then the Romantic Novelists Association, which is .org, romanticnovelassociation.org, is a good website to go to for resources. But it's also a great thing to belong to because it's a fantastic community. They do conferences, they do workshops, there's a lot of support. And I went along to a conference, met other romance writers for the first time, and aspiring romance writers do. And of course, everyone asks you, what are you writing and are you published? And I said, oh, yes, I've written a book and it's been published. And they sort of stopped and looked at me like I had two heads or something.
Sorry, that's your first, you've just written it and it's... it's just been published.
Yeah, exactly. So I completely naive, didn't know how it worked whatsoever. And then when my publisher folded, I was bumped down to reality. I submitted my second novel, my third, my fourth to several publishers and agents and didn't get anywhere. But I kept going on. I kept writing and I kept going to workshops. I kept learning. I kept reading. And I kept... in touch with all the people that I'd met in my writing community. And to be honest, if there's a secret to it all, that's it. It's networking. It's who you know. And for example, Charlotte Ledger, who's editorial director at HarperCollins, I met her at a one-to-one years before she contracted me to write The Backpacking Housewife. Although it didn't work with her straight away and the story I pitched to her didn't get accepted, she didn't forget me, you see. And we were in social circles, so we'd occasionally meet up. And then one day she pitched to me and that was unbelievable.
Yeah, well, that's what they say, is it's not what you know, it's who you know.
I think so, honestly. Wow.
And I know John and Dave, so...
this is definitely our problem.
A huge network.
Not looking good.
Well, people think that writing is a solitary profession, and it is when you're actually doing the hard work. But out with of that, it isn't, you know, it really isn't. You've got you've got to have your finger on the pulse of the publishing industry.
And do you enjoy that side of it, Janice, or is that something you've learned to enjoy? Or
I love it. No, I actually am quite gregarious, quite outgoing, and I love a party. So having been invited to a couple of the HarperCollins parties in London, I'm on the next plane, you know. I'm going in my best frock and my highest heels.
Brilliant. I've just realised where we're going wrong, lads. We keep interviewing writers and we should be interviewing agents and publishers. We're mixing with the wrong people.
We need to be going to a
off
party.
Off the line, Janice, off the line.
Yeah, we need to be going to a party with Janice, I think, really, don't we?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that would be fun.
Awkward silence after that one, Dave, but
Janice, you divide your time between writing, obviously, and travelling, but you obviously have a blog and you have a podcast as well. How much time does all that take up?
Well, the website, it's a bit of a passion project for me, actually, because I want to inspire people to write and also to travel. I think travel and just getting out in the world gives you a better perspective. And I want to inspire people to have adventures, you know, that they can then write about. So I think that's what the backpackinghousewife.com is about. It's to inspire people, especially midlife people, not exclusively, but you know that's probably my target audience. I want to tell them all about the places I've been, and do you know, not just about the places, but the experiences I've had there, the things that have happened, sometimes good, sometimes bad, scary or whatever, but always an adventure. And that's sort of my passion project at the moment, the website. I talk about my books on there, but very rarely. It's just, I do have a book page, but it's mostly about adventure, travel and adventure.
And looking through the comments on your website, it appears that you might have inspired some people to do the same as you.
I know. I mean, even when we're doing this, we're traveling, we meet people who are doing the same thing. So it doesn't seem as strange to me as it might do. But I love getting the messages. I love getting the emails. I love, especially if they've read the books, and that's been part of the inspiration.
Janice, why do you think, I don't know whether you have any thoughts on this, why do you think we have such a massive gender divide when it comes to love stories? It's a very much a female thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's I think the percentage of romance readers being female, I think it's something like 84-85%. Mm-hmm. Have you got any thoughts on that? Why is it a perception thing? Is it just because men see it as being like a female domain and therefore don't go there? Or
we can't talk about every single person or every single man being, you know, not as romantically inclined as women, because I'm sure that's not the case.
No, I'm massively soppy.
Yeah, I can tell. But but no, I just think that it's women that long for to be told a love story, you know, that women perhaps have more faith in love. Is that true? I think, you know, romance stories, they explore love. Perhaps men don't need to feel that way. I don't know.
When it comes to writing romance fiction as well, because I think I told you in my email that I was going to attempt to put out a book of love stories, like short love stories. But do you think I should change my name?
Oh, interesting.
Would it be better to pretend that I'm not a bloke? Is that off-putting to women reading love stories?
Well, let me tell you, going back to our original conversation, when I was looking up the person who was number one on Kindle when it first started off, and it was a love story, it was a male writer.
Oh,
yeah.
Right.
And I thought, what's driven him to write romance? He's gone on to thrillers now, so maybe.
No one's reading him.
I don't know. He's a talented writer. But I don't know. I think perhaps women would like to feel secure that it's a female voice.
Why do men suck at expressing love? Is it 'cause we are afraid? When we prefer to offend, overwriting a happy end. Why can't we men just write love stories that might make our shriveled eyes flood with tears, not seen as honorable to be vulnerable? Best take the peace and drink some beers.
So Janice, you sent us a few chapters of your first backpacking housewife book.
I did.
Which I enjoyed reading, especially learning about travel in Thailand. We're planning a family trip in a couple of years' time when the kids are hitting their GCSEs
wonderful.
And A-levels at the same time. And you, in return, very kindly, I think, have read our love stories.
Uh-huh, I have.
How do you feel about discussing them? Are you feeling the pressure of our expectation? Are you happy to?
There's a little bit of a nervousness in your voice right now.
there always is on this podcast.
I think we were fine, Janice, until you said the absolute thing that a love story needs of any sort is a happy ending.
It's the happy ending. That's it. I mean, what is a love story?
I'm not sure that any of us got to that bit.
Yeah. Well, maybe there's a difference between a love story and a romance.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought of that?
Well, it's an interesting question, isn't it? Because because when we first set ourselves this challenge of writing a romance, I think we very quickly changed it to a story that involves love somehow.
That was your get-out clause.
It was. Yeah.
Exactly, yeah. It just seemed a bit easier than writing about... Because I don't know about you guys, but I don't think anyone's ever referred to me as being romantic in any way.
Yeah.
And I think they were probably right to not do so.
Well, I thought they were very entertaining and I really enjoyed them. A romance story essentially is a love story, yes, but a sensual love story between two people. And what's most important is that emotional intensity in a story.
Yes.
So, and a happy ending.
Well, we had a bit of that going on.
So,
yeah, but Not the happy ending bit, but the intensity.
Yeah, but what we can't have is a tragic ending. We can't have any stalking or obsessional behaviour, and we can't have any violence or manipulation or any kind of physical abuse or mental abuse or, you know, maybe sex without romance, which again brings us back to the emotional intensity. So would you like me to tell you, read to you the notes that I made? I did make a few notes.
I think so, yes. Yeah, I think let's go through one at a time.
I will quote a few of my little favourite lines, if that's okay, to emphasise
favourite lines, boys.
Points.
That's good.
That's the points I've made.
A few favourite lines, lads. So go, Janice.
Well, they were good. No, come on. They were very, very good.
Should we start with Tom?
Oh, shall we? Okie bloody dokie, here's my story. Courting. Even now, like the needle in a compass, his eyes are drawn to her. Drinking in her features for the millionth time, but with all the spark and butterflies of the first. She looks stern, nervous. But why wouldn't she? Apart from everything else going on, he thought, this was the first time they'd seen each other's parents. He tried to catch her eye so he could flash a reassuring smile, making it all okay. That's all he ever wanted, just to look after her, protect her from the world around. But he guessed this wasn't the time or place to show her that. Then came all the questions. She was getting the full interrogation about how they first met, how he used to admire her from afar and all his romantic gestures. How it was love at first sight. Well, she didn't use the phrase love at first sight. That's what he always said. God, he wanted so much to jump in and save her. To tell them about the first time he saw her. Tuesday, June the 5th, 10:06 a.m, in the park. Her hair flowing like the ripples across a field of golden wheat. Her summer dress waltzing with the breeze, casting the perfect shape of her perfect thighs, every perfect step. Just before he'd bought her that coffee, when he knew they'd clicked. The first time I remember seeing him, she said. At the coffee shop, it didn't really register at the time. I stupidly thought he was just a kind stranger buying me a coffee to make my day better. He's blushing now. His love-drunk eyes betraying the fact infatuated is a station he's long since left, and he's now way down the line. He sits there purposefully drawing a deep breath to relive the memory of her heavy perfume entwined with the freshly ground coffee beans. He was desperate to tell them about the roses. How it was pure Hollywood romance. He'd somehow bluffed his way into her office, in and out quick before anyone could see. There were gifts too. One time at work, there were flowers, she said, with a tear of emotion in her eye. Not just flowers, they were roses. Red roses, a dozen of them, he thought, but dared not say. I had not been away from my seat for more than a moment, and then there they were, on my desk. He was hoping she'd be surprised. And right now, he was learning just how shocked she was. Little things like this certainly proved how desperate he was to show how much she meant to him. There were no further questions. Then his chance came. But despite his enthusiasm in telling his side of this tale of love and desire, his audience was somewhat unreceptive. His efforts simply met with, "But this isn't a Hollywood rom-com, is it, Mr. Spencer?" He offered little more than a shrug as he looked out across the courtroom, still trying to catch her uncatchable eye. So there you go. That's my effort. Lay it on me, Janice.
I love the writing. I love the analogy of the needle in a compass. His eyes are drawn to her like the needles of a compass. I love that. Fabulous first line. And drinking in her features for the millionth time, but with all the spark and butterflies of the first. I mean, that's beautiful. That's full of romantic intention.
It is. It's nice, though.
And that all-important element of emotional intensity that we need. And we, the reader, immediately know that he's in love from that writing. He's drinking her in. He's intoxicated by her. And then we learn that she's looking stern and nervous. And we don't know why, we don't understand that yet, but we do see that he's trying to catch her eye and he's trying to make it okay. But why isn't this the time or the place to show her that? I think here you successfully introduced intrigue into the story.
Cool.
That's important too, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Tender meant that. Good.
Yeah. And then came all the questions. And by then I was truly invested in this story from this point. I assumed with the earlier mention of the parents and the first time they'd seen each other's parents, that this meant it was going to be an anxious meet the parents scene. That's what the story was going to be
it's
about.
It's funny you say that. That line came in quite late in the editing process.
Well, it was
feeling like I needed a diversionary hook.
I thought that makes it a really recognisable situation as well, isn't it? Because
it
we've all been
key.
There.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I understood the anxiety there, but slowly the desperate sounding narrative starts to turn rather menacing and his intoxication starts to sound scarily like obsession. And there we have it. His love-drunk eyes betrayed the fact that infatuated is a station he's long since left and he's now way down the line. That's very good writing.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
Nice metaphor, Tommy.
Mm. Yeah. And he compares his love of her to pure Hollywood, a pure Hollywood romance. But then he's confronted with, but this isn't a Hollywood romance, is it, Mr. Spencer? And with that one line, I suddenly realised my fears were confirmed, and with the chilling response next, he offered little more than a shrug as he looked across the courtroom, still trying to catch her uncatchable eye.
There's your happy ending, people.
It's a creepy little freak.
Wow, Tom. This, it's a fantastic story. It's really well written.
Well, thank you.
Is it a love story? Yes. I suppose it is.
It's love in some format, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Certainly not it's not a romance. Well, it's kind of a one-sided romance, I guess.
It's
isn't
not
it?
A romance story. So no, a big fail for you, Tom.
Thank you.
Big cross. I've noticed, Tom, you often write quite disturbed characters, which is very interesting.
Yes, isn't
all
it?
All clues to the puzzle.
You know what they say, though? Write what you know.
I think if I were you, I'd be pitching this to Stephen King's agent instead of perhaps the Mills and Boone.
I did see it was a very good twist. I didn't see it coming to begin with, but I really, really personally liked the line that I went back and reread it about there were no further questions. That's a really nice line when you suddenly realise it's a courtroom thing. There were no further questions. Very well done, Tom.
It was totally one of those short stories where as soon as you finished it, you want to read it again, see how it works.
Check, double check. Is there any cheating going on here?
Exactly.
Has anything been hidden that shouldn't have been? Oh, no, it's all above board.
It was masterfully done. I mean, skill.
Oh, that's very kind.
Kudos.
I actually felt a little bit sorry for him.
Despite the fact that you sort of
left with this shiver of distaste.
I just hope they sent him down for a very long time.
Well, yeah, I don't want him out.
I didn't get sent down.
But he's so delusional. It's almost like you do feel sorry for him. I mean, you don't want him out in the wild.
No, but that's to him, it is a love story, isn't it? That's the point.
That's kind of the point of it.
That's it. And it's such a powerful thing, isn't it? Writing in the first person like that, because you inevitably take their side early on. And it was a nice. You couldn't have written that in third person. I think it really works in first person.
It does, because your reader only knows what he knows and his observations, and of course. Then it all turns on its head, and oh my gosh, I started to get the chills halfway through, thinking this isn't, and I was right.
There's no happy ending.
Imagine Janice going, "Hold on a minute, no,
you, this is a nasty man."
Well, I'm really glad you enjoyed it. Thank you for those kind words.
It was very, very well written.
Thank you.
So who's next?
Is there any point doing the others, Janice? Should we bother doing the others?
How about Dave's The Necklace?
Go on then. Go on.
Okay.
Yeah, Dave, give us a lovely reading of The Necklace and then we'll
chat about it. Caroline sat back on the ornate swing chair in her favourite shady corner of the garden, unable to stop grinning. Her youngest daughter was finally getting married. It made sense to have the engagement party here. The garden was large and private, and although she doubted it would look quite so immaculate once the last of the drunken guests had staggered homewards, her elder children both held their parties here. So it was only fair, and Charlotte looked so happy. It had been a tough few years, but watching her little Princess Charlie hand in hand with her Prince Charming, it was the happiest Caroline had felt since long before her dear husband had finally passed away. As only a proud, gushing mother can, she half turned towards one of the guests perched on the chair beside her. "Doesn't she look beautiful?" The guest didn't reply, but Caroline saw them nod enthusiastically as they sipped their pims. She didn't recognise this particular guest, but then Charlotte had so many friends. I was starting to wonder if it would ever happen. And when Paul finally proposed, I don't know who was happier, me or Charlotte. Caroline thought back to the moment her daughter had shared the news. She'd just returned from a whirlwind trip to Venice, beautifully tanned, but looking tired and teary as she showed off the garish diamond ring, clearly two sizes too big. She'd made the right choice in the end, though. He'd do anything to make her happy, Caroline continued. Yes, he works a lot, but he spends every penny on her. He dotes on her. Caroline waved towards the happy couple. Paul was too busy sharing a joke with his friends to notice, but Charlotte, at least, was looking over in her direction, wearing a coy smile. She didn't wave back, but then Paul was clasping one of her hands, and with the other she was absently playing with her necklace, turning it over and over. That must be new as well, the necklace. Caroline nudged the guest with her elbow, but still received no more response than a courtesy nod. Not seen it before, but the way she's holding on to it, it must be very special. The stone's a beautiful colour, really matches her eyes. Not the sort of thing I imagine Paul buying, really, but I tell you what, the lad's done well this time. I think he's finally starting to learn that there's more to a good present than the money you spend on it. At least that was always my husband's excuse for the tat he bought me. Caroline laughed a little too loudly and turned to face the guest head on for the first time. They were very quiet and seemed to be wearing an expression of extreme sadness and extreme happiness at the same time. She followed their gaze and noticed that her daughter wasn't staring back at her at all. "It's Peridot," he said suddenly. "It's her birthstone."
Very nice, Dave.
Well, that was Dave's lovely reading of the necklace.
Okay, so I think the first paragraph successfully sets the scene and the premise of the story, because here we meet our protagonist, Caroline, and she's sitting in her garden, and we learn from the descriptive narrative that she's grinning, feeling happy, because her youngest daughter is getting married, and she's hosting the engagement party in the family garden. And the next line is, "And Charlotte looked happy." But just an observation here, I was immediately struck by the sound similarities between the names of Caroline and Charlotte. And I kind of feel...
Dave's not very good at names.
Yeah.
It's not my
really struggles
suit.
Coming up with names.
So I do feel...
They were probably the last two people he spoke to on the day he wrote it.
Oh, well, I do feel that maybe to avoid potential confusion through a longer story that you might consider a name.
Yeah.
A name change.
He did already think of that, because Charlotte was originally called Caroline.
Oh.
Caroline and Caroline. But he thought,
that was
hold on
too
a minute.
Close.
Hold on a minute. I've seen that.
Oh, that is a fair comment. So, names are not my strong suit.
A little bit of structural advice there.
Good point there. Yeah.
But Caroline starts up a one-sided conversation with an unfamiliar guest, and she notes to him how her daughter is absently playing with a new necklace, and that she'd not seen the necklace before. And I quote, "By the way she's holding onto it, it must be very special." And she then gushes approvingly of her daughter's fiance, but laughingly, a little too loud, she turns to her guest for the first time. And again, I'm a little bit confused here, because there was a change in tense from singular use of guest to the plural they, and with the expressions of extreme sadness and extreme happiness. And then the intriguing last line, "It's her birthstone." So, Dave, I think you should set the scene really well in introducing us to the romantic setting, an engagement party and all, and the beautiful young couple in love, and a necklace which threads its way through the story, providing the intrigue. And I do like intrigue in a story. But this intrigue escalates to the mystery guest, who's then at first unforthcoming, but then seems to know Caroline really well. But he or they know her birth month or birthday. So a little bit of confusion there on my part.
Yes, well...
It's because, Jan, it's because you were expecting a happy ending, And what Dave has done is not a happy ending because the bride is cheating.
This is just a story of unrequited love.
Well, maybe we needed another paragraph.
Yes. So
it's quite nice that you didn't get that, Janice.
I didn't get it.
Isn't it?
No, yeah. that's bad. Because
you're a nice person, Janice. Because you're a nice person.
So I was deliberately sort of obtuse with the pronouns, saying they, to not give away the gender of the person. Then it's just right at the end, it's revealed that they know about this necklace because they bought it for her, you see. There's a sort of secret love.
I can see how it would have got better. It would have got better, I'm sure. But it shows promise.
But are they... I made the assumption that they were having an affair and that she is basically marrying one bloke for the money whilst maintaining a relationship with some other guy that she actually
liked. Yes, yes. Well, yeah, that's the thing, you see. I'm not sort of explicit about the depth of the relationship.
Exactly.
But there is definitely
in a good way.
Yeah, there's definitely a relationship between these two people.
And that relationship leads to a romantic story, which is good. And I mean, it is good. And I would certainly have liked to have read more. I mean, if I look at my notes here, I've written at the bottom, I would like to have read more. So there you go. Maybe that would have
an opening chapter, an opening page to a longer story.
Yeah. Maybe if someone hadn't imposed an arbitrary 500-word limit on these stories,
we might have been
all right.
John was involved. Otherwise, he'd be like, I've written 12,000 words. Let me read it out.
Well, I already did that before and I had to write something
else. You did set your foot. You were the first one to complain, weren't you?
I liked the fact that it wasn't too twisty. I think that we're always a little bit... we do like a little twist.
Yeah, a hook. Yeah.
I think Tim Craig said, a flash fiction writer that was on the podcast, the first time we spoke to him, he said that twisty endings aren't really like their done thing in flash fiction. And I thought this was nice because it gently kind of just took you along the road. It wasn't trying to give you a big punchy reveal at the end, unlike Tommy and I think.
Yeah, it wasn't a sort of smack in the face.
It was like the expectation of what was coming was set out quite deliberately in a way and very much through the mother character, you know, because she was so excited.
Yeah.
There was clearly something coming, you know. It was like you'd set it up really well. You know, you kind of felt what was coming without knowing exactly what was coming. I thought that was good.
Dave, do you remember where the germ of the idea came from? Where did it start from?
It was just about sort of being strange people you see at engagement and sort of wedding parties. I tell you, there's a story about a wedding that I went to, and there was the bride's best man was at the wedding, and he did a very strange speech, and it became really clear that this guy was madly in love with the bride.
And kind of like a mix of your story and my story.
Yeah, basically, he got up and said, well, you might be marrying her, but I got to be with her while she was getting into her wedding dress this morning. And it was and it just made me think about
time
the sort
place.
Of,
time place.
Yeah, the sort of unrequited relationships that, you know, look at someone at a party and think, why do they look a bit sad? And maybe they're madly in love with one of the people who's getting married. So that's where it came from.
Wow. Interesting.
Do you know, looking at this, I think you could actually turn this into something quite romantic with some tweaks, I reckon. Because it's got a darkness to it that I think you could easily turn into more like a yearning.
Yeah.
Maybe
just
by changing the point of view from the mother to the lover. So if the lover's sitting there listening to the mother banging on about how happy her daughter is, and we know the power of this man's feelings, that could actually potentially make quite a powerful, painful love story.
That sounds great.
And he could be saving her.
If you wanted
if I had, if I had
romance-y.
Your romance, John, maybe. Maybe.
Yeah, we know Dave would just go, yes, all right, I'll do that. And he'd keep writing, and about five or six pages, someone would be dead. And they'd be like kind of someone else cheating on someone else. And then, yeah.
But it would still be funny.
It'd have funny bits. It'd be good.
But thanks, Janice. That's,
I thought it was great. Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, gosh, it's John now, isn't it?
Yes.
It is. Right,
so.
Conflict of interest. Do you want to, are you going to read this out?
Yes, I'll read it first. Here we go. Conflict of interest. Somewhere to the north, beyond the sanctuary of the bed, in room 423 of the Imperial Hotel, another mortar exploded. A 5-year war between the Guardies and the Ferubians had turned Massu into a war zone. Since the discovery of more gold deposits, even the peace talks routinely ended in angry threats and walkouts. The two factions, already sworn enemies, were locked in an endless dance of death. Lying in the bed, Jamila ran her finger over the scar that navigated the dome of Seydou's pectoral muscle up towards his neck. "We have to stop seeing each other," she said. "If anyone finds out, they will kill us." He turned his head towards her, shook it slowly. "I would sooner die." They spoke quietly, calmly, but beneath the air-conditioned surface of their thoughts, hot, damp agonies circulated in a rolling boil. "Why do you have to be Farubian?" she said, pinching his arm. "Why are you Gadi?" he replied, flicking her hand away, arching an eyebrow. "Anyway," she said, "it's only a matter of time." "Before what?" "Before we are caught." "Better make the most of it, then." He pulled her towards him, fingers sliding up her nightdress, his mouth on her neck, a sudden frenzy of startled flesh under his tongue. "Stop!" Knowing she was serious, he sat up. "What do you want me to do?" He reached over to where a bottle of sparkling wine was chilling, a gift from the hotel manager. Seydou swigged from it, then expertly poured a thin, fizzing stream into Jamila's mouth. "You want to give this up?" he asked. "End it tomorrow." "We could," she said, snapping her fingers. "Just like that." He smiled, didn't believe her. "I've never told you about my father," she said quietly. "No," he frowned. "He worked the gold mines his whole life. One day he dug into a vein and pulled out a lump of gold the size of a cola nut." She showed him with her fingers. They stared at the gap as though the nugget had condensed into being. "A lifetime's wages in a single moment. When his shift ended, he hid it inside his deep, skinny armpit. He got as far as the road when a guard called him back. They found the gold and put a bullet through his head." She looked at him. "I am too much like my father." She kissed him, rolling on top of him, pressing him into the bed, their tiny island for the next 6 hours. In the morning, Jamila sat in the hot conference room of the hotel, scowling at the man opposite her. "You don't want peace," the man spat. Jamila noted the white scar across the gap in the open shirt of his military fatigues. "You want to keep us on our knees," he said, his fist hitting the table. The other peace envoys jumped an inch off their seats, while she, head negotiator of the Guardies, remained utterly still. There you go.
Okay, wow. I must say, I was drawn into this because it's a war-torn story in which two factions are in conflict, they're sworn enemies. I love the line, "locked in an endless dance of death." That was really one of the wonderful line, John.
Thanks.
And from that first paragraph, we're told that the scene is set in the sanctuary of a hotel room. Nice word, that. Room 423 of the Imperial Hotel, where two lovers are lying intimately on the bed. But we soon learn from their wonderful dialogue that they are star-crossed lovers. And she says, and I quote, "We have to stop seeing each other. If anyone finds out, they will kill us." And he turns his head towards her and shakes it slowly, saying, "I would sooner die." So this scene is filled with tenderness and passion, intimacy, but there are desperate stakes. It's a Romeo and Juliet,
yes,
in a war-torn land where the gold mining has seemingly higher value than life and love. So we've got Jamila, the heroine of the story, illustrating to her lover that she has a
good name, John.
Yeah, there's a nice name.
See that, Dave? That's a good name.
Just make up words. Yeah.
But she's illustrated with this part of the story that she has a fighting spirit. She's relating the story about her father being shot for stealing a nugget of gold from the gold mine. And this sets the stake even higher. And I think this short story has nuggets of emotional intensity and tension and the forbidden
love. Nice metaphor
love.
There, Janice.
Yeah, the forbidden love seems hopeless. Until the final paragraph. set the following morning in a conference room where we see that Jamila is actually a peace negotiator. And honestly, to do all this in one page and in 500 words, I think it's pretty wonderful, John.
Thanks, Janice.
I think this story has a lot of potential. It's got all the elements of a promising romance novel because you've given your readers hope that some way and somehow, despite the conflict, Jamila has the power to fight for peace, and she's fighting for it with her heart. So well done.
Thanks very much. I feel like I feel bad now because I feel like you've missed a tiny little bit at the end that basically means that they're pretty horrible people. And again, I haven't written a romance accidentally. Haven't written a love story.
Well, do you know, the thing is, with romance, you've got to have black moments. You've got to have ups and downs. You've got to have an undulating pace. It can't all be sweetness and light.
No, it's the same as any story, isn't it? It needs to.
Yeah. But don't you hate them because you like because she's negotiating with the guy that she's been in bed with, and she's basically arguing. Well,
not if you take it as a start of a story though, rather than a whole. Because then why is the question, isn't it? Might not be her fault, might not be his fault, might not be...
Yeah, they've got to play the game. They've got to play the war game, haven't they, on the outside, whilst the romance is going on the inside.
Yeah, maybe it's not... Maybe I didn't make it that clear. But the thing is, they are prolonging the conflict.
So they can spend time together.
So they can spend time together in a hotel room.
Oh, that's very dark.
It is very dark.
Isn't that?
Yeah, you shouldn't have told us that, John.
No, you kind of ruined it now.
No, sure. I can't believe I admitted that now.
Bloody hell. What horrible people. God.
I know they are despicable people.
Who's paying for the hotel room? Did they get the hotel room free as well?
Is it on expenses?
It's all laid on.
Oh, it's just...
And it's the hotel manager has given them champagne, gives them gifts because he wants them to wrap up. He wants them to negotiate and wrap it up
so that dragging it out.
It will bring tourism back to the city.
Wow, there's a lot going for it, isn't there?
Yeah.
Sorry, I feel like I've completely ruined it for you.
No, I think I've completely ruined it for you.
But then even with that, John, the story, but then people can change, characters change. That's
of course, they've got to grow. Yeah. There's got to be a story arc.
So that's their will store, that's their life
that's
view.
Their starting point, yeah.
And they're wrong. That's the point. Incorrect worldview.
I tell you what, just make that a prologue. Have that as the prologue and then start it somewhere else in chapter one.
Yeah.
So but it was Dave's question was going to be, did you steal it off Romeo and Juliet?
I did feel very Shakespearean, as Janice said at the start there. And also, John, you always got to slip something about fingers in there somewhere. I did notice.
What was the thing?
She did. Okay. Yeah. That was just an intimate gesture that you had me at that one.
There was definitely a really nice snapshot of a story, and I definitely wanted to know more about this world. I thought it was good world building.
Yes, I was going to say
really
that.
Sort of built that world, and I just thought, I want to know more about this. I want to know more about these characters. I want to know more about the conflict that's going on. Just, you know,
I thought it was good how you kind of got a flash of the conflict, a flash of the hotel scene, a flash of the whole gold mining thing you drew around that, and then kind of this sort of complete chop, pull away, fade to black, come back up in the morning to this other little mini scene at the end that still had loads in it. I thought it was really good.
That changed everything.
Yeah, that ruined it in many ways, Janice, I guess you'd say. at what point did you think of the title, John?
At the end,
right, okay.
When I finished writing it.
I didn't know whether it was one of the... You know, sometimes a story can come out of the title.
Oh, I see,
to some
yeah.
extent. Or what, you know, whether it's... Because it was a good title, really, I guess.
Thanks, man. Yeah. No, it just, it popped straight out and I thought, it's got to be that.
Perfect.
Super. Oh, well, thanks, guys. That's lovely.
Yeah, and thanks, Janice.
Oh, you're welcome.
Sounds like you actually read them and stuff. That's brilliant.
I did.
You read them.
Yeah, and you've given them really a lot of thought and, we really appreciate it.
Well,
yeah.
I hope to have been helpful. Critiques are meant to be helpful.
We're beyond help, but...
No, clearly not.
Appreciate it.
Clearly not.
We really do appreciate it.
Thank you.
So, Janice, where are you going next? That's what I want to know. Where are you off next? And what are your next projects?
I'm here for 6 months. My husband's doing a dive project here, so he's busy. And then we're going over to France.
And then Blackpool, is it next? Or?
No, we're going back to France. Okay.
That's a better choice.
Another bit house sitting.
Oh,
nice.
Yeah.
Same place?
A different place, but a couple of months. It's still a very nice property. I've not been, not seen.
Is there room
there,
for all three of us, or do we need to come separately? Like how would
we? We'll share. We'll absolutely share a room.
Yeah, right. Happy to do that.
Well, I'll let you know, guys.
Good, very diplomatic answer. Good answer.
But excitingly, after that, the end of October, we're going back to Asia, and we just bought our ticket actually just recently, flying from London to Singapore. And we've got a return ticket 6 months later. So wow. We're not quite sure what we're going to be doing in Asia, except that one of my sons lives over there. So definitely a family reunion and a bit of adventure, I think. Fantastic. Inspiration for maybe another book.
More inspiration for writing.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you have something that you are that you're sort of working on at the minute? Is there a story that you're desperate to tell?
Yeah.
Good. Glad
to be tight-lipped about that one. Thank
Excellent. Thanks, Janet. Are you allowed to tell us anything about it? Is it same along the same vein, or is it a different direction?
Well,
or is it,
you've sort of picked up on something there, because it's slightly different direction.
Oh,
yeah. Is that because you read ours and now you're going to give it a really nasty ending?
I'm just going to. I'm just
really sad.
I'm just going to plagiarise all these stories. I'm just going to mix them all up.
Good luck with that.
Or if we just ruined love for you forever with our stories?
Oh, no, I think I can always come up with a good love story.
So what are we talking? Are you allowed to tell us what genre?
Well, it's very much still in the head stage. I've not actually written anything yet. And that's deliberate, because I pretty much gave myself permission to come here for 6 months and just have fun, go to the beach, meet with my friends, drink lots of rum, and read under a palm tree, not just worry about, you know, the next book, the next words and everything else. So I've given myself permission not to write. Which I think sometimes you just have to do that, you know, take the pressure off yourself.
Absolutely. I've given myself that permission for about 42 years now. So maybe
put the kettle on, Dave.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, when you explain that what you're currently doing is sitting under a palm tree and drinking rum, it makes it even more astonishing that you've taken the time out to come and talk to us.
Yeah, it seems like you've got the worst end of the
very
deal.
Very much indeed.
Well, I really enjoy talking to other writers. I really do that. Perhaps I've missed that a little bit.
Thanks,
so Janice. Thank you for that.
Very, very
thank
well. Good luck on your travels and good luck with your writing. And
thank you.
Safe journey. Cheers. Yeah,
thank you very much, Janice.
Guys.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Big thank you to Janice. That was great. Just asked us to point out that her website is thebackpackinghousewife.com. So that's got loads of stuff about books and her travels and all sorts.
Yeah, and also check out her podcast, which is Travel with the Backpacking Housewife.
The links are in the show notes.
So read them.
I don't know if... I always wonder whether anyone reads the show
notes. Yeah, exactly. We don't write them nothing, do we?
I spend quite a lot of time writing them, crafting those.
You do. They're a lovely bit of writing,
so
actually.
So if you've never looked at them, you've got 50 odds to go and read and go, that's quite good. Enjoy them.
Do you know what? There are whole seminars on how to write good show notes that get the best sort of engagement.
Right. Well, obviously, I don't think get any engagement, but are nicely written. I don't know if that counts or anything.
That's
all I care about. Yeah. Do you mean the Google Analytics, Google algorithm, whatever? I just want to write a few funny lines.
SEO, no. Good quality puns. That's what you want in show notes.
AI doesn't know funny. Not yet, anyway.
Anyway, wasn't Janice a lovely person to talk to? That was lovely, wasn't it?
It really was. It really was. Quite inspiring.
Yeah.
It does make you think, I wonder how much I could get for this house.
Just sell up and move on.
Well, it made me think, years ago, when I must have been in school, I think, myself and my friend Bob had this idea.
Oh, I remember this.
To almost do exactly that.
Yeah.
It was called Put It On Black. And the plan was to sell everything that we owned.
Which presumably wasn't that
much.
And
travel to America. We didn't have anything, which is where the plan fell down. We hadn't had a lifetime to build up. But the plan was sell everything, go to America, fly to New York, buy a camper van, and then travel across America to Las Vegas, picking up people along the way, trying to encourage other people to do the same thing, to go into one casino with all of our worldly possessions turned into chips and put it all on one table and just put it all on black on one spin of a roulette
it's
wheel.
It's a great concept. That's a great Still idea, a great concept.
For a TV yeah. series.
Well, that's where it kind of went to. Is it turned into, you know, that it's like a travel documentary, isn't it? Going through all the.
Should we do that for season three?
We should.
Just sod the writing stuff and just do that.
Just go to America. Or we even started to like map out the places that we could go along the route. Just trying to encourage other people to join us, a bit like Forrest Gump. Mm. You know, just get like a big crowd of people.
Do you know what it is, Dave? Though actually, that's a very good log line for a novel, for a story.
A bit like Forrest.
No, before that, skip back to the actual idea. But picking people up like a
What I love the thought of all these people around the table, and then the roulette thing spins, and everyone's put their money on black, and then it lands on red.
Yes.
And then we get everyone lynched. Just sort of looks at each other.
Yep. Ah. Me and Bob get lynched. And
how are we getting home then?
Although I just imagine in that scenario that Dave will be sat in the corner going, put mine on red, didn't I? The end. Yeah.
Had a little side bet.
Or I just bottled it, lads. I'm sorry. I couldn't do it.
But I always thought that was a really interesting concept for a... Something
it's good. It is good. Yeah.
Janice's plan seems to have a bit more belts and braces, a little bit more.
A bit more.
Probably a better idea overall. Yeah.
Works better as an empty nester
than
a teenager with no worldly
possessions. Potentially losing everything.
Yeah.
Hey, so anyway, I was telling you something before Janice rudely interrupted us. She didn't rudely interrupt us. It was very nice to be interrupted. So let me finish what I was going to say. So I was talking about the restructure that I was thinking. I'm going to rethink what I'm writing and in what order I'm writing
it. Oh, yeah, your ladder.
Yes,
my ladder. Was that today? Were you talking about today? It seems a really long time ago.
It really does. But the thing is, right, as a consequence of this restructure, this is the bad news, I'm afraid, fellas. I'm sorry to say, a couple of the things I said I'd do, I've had to reprioritize. I've had to deprioritize, and I'm afraid they're just going to have to wait. Mm-hmm. So I've got on top of my list, because I'm halfway through it, I'm going to do murder mystery, right? I've got to at least finish a first draft before I just get stuck and I never finish it. I never move on, right? So that's on top.
Yeah.
Number two... Partly this is a marital thing, but I have to do the Happy Marriage show as well, because that's a lovely project to have with Katie, and I need to focus on it, and I'm really enjoying it as well. And number three, Poker Night.
Phew.
We've got to give this more focus. I don't quite know how, but it has to happen.
Maybe by actually doing something? Get it on the ladder. I think you're right about the ladder. Like, it's the ladder.
Yeah, we've got to find more time for it somehow. But that unfortunately means... that until further notice, I have to shelve some other stuff. One of them being The Failing Writer's Guide to Writing, which I still think will be great, but maybe next season or something. Maybe when we've got millions of listeners next season.
Maybe we should write something before we write a book about writing something.
Exactly.
I think you might have got that priority right there, John.
Good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the more people we talk to, the more stuff we learn. And we're kind of building a database information.
Good.
I think that would work. Me and Dave really
like, definitely. Let's not. Yeah, that's off the list.
Let's not do that.
That's off the list.
Yeah. I really got to twist your arm here. My sci-fi time travel book, which I'm really excited about.
Any more joint projects I don't have to do?
Finally, sadly, my short love stories book.
No.
I am not going to have time. I'm just not going to have enough time.
Well, somebody think about the trees.
But I'm not going to have enough time to write enough love stories, I've realised, to fill a decent-sized book in time to self-publish something for Valentine's Day. I'm not thrown it away altogether. It's not crashed and burned. I've just had to park it up by the side of the road.
Well, that's fair.
Put it up on bricks.
Yeah.
You know?
Priorities. I mean, it's sad because, but you're right. It's not...
You can't do everything.
Spread yourself
too thin. The good thing is I've got two more short love stories now because you've just gifted me two. What do you think?
Yeah.
Does that work?
Well... Yeah, I think you can have mine.
Oh, can I? Thanks,
yeah,
Dave.
Of course you can.
I think love stories should have a happy ending, though, John.
No, because they're love themed. My other stories aren't all. They're not all happy endings.
Yeah, I think we've discovered today that there's a difference between romance and love.
And not even that. There's a difference between a story that just features love as a linchpin, as a theme.
Love as a linchpin.
Rather than so that gives us a bit more scope.
An absolute subject.
Maybe you guys could write some more. I don't know. We could do like a joint project.
Well, what about our ladders?
Yeah, we've got our own ladders.
All right, later on, in the future.
I don't know.
In the future.
Is there another way to get this book out by Valentine's Day? I don't think so.
Maybe we could start the Failing Lovers podcast.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Absolutely. Little side project. Yeah. But I think that's fair enough, John. I think, you know.
Trouble is, doing the Failing, we've got a lot of stuff on. If we do the Failing Lovers podcast, we'd probably have trouble keeping it up, wouldn't we?
There we go. I think that's fair enough.
You've got
to prioritise.
Yeah, no, that's good planning, though.
Thanks, guys. That's very understanding of you.
I think it is. I think that's the right. It's got to be the right thing, because I've been in the same place of just freezing through. Oh, that's too much stuff. Mm. Can't start. And what's the point if I can't finish? Blah. And you just end up doing, before you know it, you've done nothing. And it's not through lack of want to do something. You just
exactly. You just feel overwhelmed.
Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah.
Oh, well done. Good.
Thanks.
But yes, now I need to go and see if I can think of some names that don't begin with C for my next story.
Hey, Dave, didn't you have a similar problem when you wrote a thing in the sitcom in The Chemists that they were all called Jancis or something? Or Jane.
What, Jane and Julie?
That's it. Oh, yeah.
It doesn't even occur to me until someone points it out. And now I look back on it and think, how did I not realise that? Yeah.
It's like you've already been warned. You've been warned once.
No. I think what it is, when I speak to people, I try to avoid their names as much as possible for fear of getting them wrong. So I just say, oi, mate, you, yeah, right, yeah. So, but, well, yeah. Didn't even think. There is a similarity between Caroline and Charlotte. But, hey. You live and learn. Well, some people live and learn. I just live.
There,
at least I'm living.
Yeah.
Tell you what, John, if you're so bloody good at coming up with names.
I'm really good, yeah.
Yeah, all right. What would your nom de plume be if you were to become a full-time male romance
writer? Well, that would depend, Dave, on what kind of romance we're talking about.
You can have multiple names for different genres.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's important, isn't it? Because they sound very different. They've got a different feel. So you need to
tell us the names, then me and Dave will have to try and guess the genre.
Okay.
Tabitha Squeal.
Oh my goodness, that's dirty erotic fiction.
That's erotic fiction, that
is,
isn't it?
A steamy forbidden romance, that is. Summer Bunbury.
That sounds like, I don't know, something you might need cream for.
That's quite floral.
What is
floral?
Romance. You're close.
is that a genre?
Floral.
Big genre. It's a big genre now, Dave. Floral is huge. Floral romance fiction. The floral garage scene in the music world is huge.
That has blown
up. You've got the right feel. She writes sweet holiday romance books.
Yeah.
Summer Bunbury. Okay. What about Lola Golding?
This sounds a bit maybe 50 Shades of Grey type thing.
Executive. I was going to say executive.
Nailed it. Urban Sex in the City type romance.
Yeah.
Laura Throng.
Laura Throng. Laura Throng. There's a name to conjure with.
Maybe stuff about birds.
What?
Ornithological romance.
Yeah.
She writes mainly about love triangles and orgies.
Ah, right, okay. So right, less so yeah. Thought. Okay. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Cara Vidal.
Oh, that's got to be like some kind of continental
artistic romance,
like Mediterranean.
Yeah, romance in...
You're kind of right.
Historical.
Romance on holiday. Yeah.
Did you say artistic, Dave?
Probably. I think I did.
I thought you did. Well, that's literary romance, that
literary.
Is. Cara Vidal. Yeah, that's
literally
quite high-end
romance.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about Keely Wheeler?
Automobile related. Love in a motor.
I mean, good, but yeah, I mean, you're along the right lines. She writes about real people, gritty love affairs on council estates.
Oh, right, okay. Is that a genre?
It is now, yeah.
Council Estate Romance.
Is now.
Can we get Janice back on? Because I'm not definitely. Sure John's... I think he's gone off on a tangent here.
Hang on. I think Birdie wrote one of those.
It was. That's true.
It was erotic. Erotica,
yeah.
Didn't he?
Perhaps I should use... What was her name?
Completely blank those
Perhaps I could
out,
steal
so I
that
remember
one.
Remember that.
Keely Wheeler. Yes.
Keely Wheeler.
Sounds like the kind of name Dave would come up with.
Yeah.
He spent a long time coming up with the first name and thought, I'll just go with something that rhymes.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking a bit more literally when it comes to, you know, if you're a man...
Oh, right, okay, yeah, see where you're going with that, yeah.
No, if I was coming up with a name...
Yeah, Wheels.
And let's face it, you know, why wouldn't I?
Can't wait to hear this.
For a man who wanted to convince the world that he was a woman writing fiction, I'd just go all out for it and just call myself something like Lucy Breast so that no one
would guess.
You're not going to miss...
That's not a real name.
Yeah. God, that's definitely a woman, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, you're not good at this, are you? I got a couple more for you.
Other genres?
Yeah. Rennie Lamar.
Oh, is that space romance?
No.
Political romance?
Cigarette romance?
No, it's sort of more like Rennie Lamar. It's Bridgerton-style, culturally diverse romances set around the time of the French Revolution.
Yeah, I mean, that was going to be my next.
Yeah. Specific genre.
What about Scarlett Dubois?
Is that the same as previous, but in the afternoon? I don't know how subgenre you're going with these. It feels like you're going very narrow.
Now, that is also historical romance, but that's more your sort of your 19th century deep south of America.
Yeah, it felt much more 19th century. Yeah.
Right. I tell you what, though.
What?
I'm tired now. I'm really tired, lads. I've got to admit, I think I need a break. I think I need to lie down.
Yeah. Well, it is holiday time, isn't it?
It is. I am worn out. Content like this doesn't come easy, does it?
That is true. Week after week, churning out this goodness. It's not
top
easy.
Level, top drawer stuff.
You can almost hear the face of confusion, can't you, of the listener there. What?
The like, sound what of I justification.
Okay.
What I think we're trying to say, what I think I'm trying to say, is that we'd do a break. So as much as a shock as it might be, I reckon we should have a little... mid-season break.
Yeah, let's do it.
Because everyone's doing that now. Stranger Things did that, didn't they? They had a little mid-season break. And Better Call Saul, little mid-season break. All the big shows have a mid-season break.
Oh, if they do it, we should do it. No,
how long for, do you reckon?
2 years, 18 months,
Years, yeah.
A couple of weeks, three weeks?
2 or 3 weeks.
Two or three weeks.
2 or 3 weeks, I think, just to recharge and plan.
2 or 3 weeks, yeah. But we shouldn't just go. I don't think we shouldn't just go without a promise of something even better when you come back. Because that's how you do it.
Well, that's part of it, isn't it? That's part of the reason we need a little break, because we've got a lot of planning to do, because we have got something very big.
Stranger Things, they had their break and they came back with two big specials. We are going to come back with something monumental.
Yeah, a right big to do.
Yeah.
Tell us about it, John.
Don't tell us too much, though. Do a tease.
Well, hang
tease
on,
forward,
yeah.
John.
Well, I'm not very good at secrets and like teases. I'm going to give it away, aren't I? So we have decided to do a competition.
Oh, you said too much now. Why do you say that? Why have you just given it away in the first?
It's going to be even bigger and even better. And we need you to tune in as soon as we're back from our holidays. And you can find out all about it. So we're just going to leave you with that.
I mean, last year's was brilliant, wasn't it? It was so much fun.
It was fantastic.
It was.
Last year's was great, but this is going to be bigger and better. Let's just say someone out there, mate, who knows, probably someone listening right now, is going to win a lot of money.
It's a lot more money than it was before.
Kind of made it sound like it'd be in the hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. There's going to be a lot of disappointed people when they tune in.
Well, there is anyway, isn't there? I mean, that's part of the course. That's
It's
part of our shtick. That's what we're here for.
Yeah.
I think people do like to listen, and it does give them, you know, they kind of come out at the end of the hour and kind of go, ah, well, it could be worse, couldn't it? And they feel better about themselves.
Yeah.
I think that's what we offer.
But yeah, no, it's going to be great. It's going to be amazing.
It is going to be great. And suffice to say, it's just been lovely to have you listeners listening to us.
It's nice to thank people.
Listen, guys, thank you for listening. We really appreciate it. And to pay back, we have got a big exciting competition for you. So do tune in when we're back. thanks very much for hanging out with us.
Leave it on a cliffhanger. That's how you end a half season.
All right.
Yeah.
We haven't done that, have we?
And one of us is going to die.
Well...
Dave?
Now, if one of us does dare, that's going to look awful suspicious, isn't it?
That's true. Yeah.
And if it's not you, you are going to be prime suspect.
I didn't really think that through.
Before you know it, you knock at your door, and Inspector Bobby Brown will be there.
It's a fair cop.
Reading
Bobby.
You the funky rats.
I got some childish ones. I got Betty Stubig. I got
someone's had fun today, haven't they?
I've got Sucky Spalls.
You could get away with that one.
I think you could.
Suki Spalls.
Yeah.
People would not. Yeah, that's. Yeah, you should do that. Yeah. That's a keeper, that one.
Yeah. Put the kettle on.
Wendy coming?
Is Wendy coming?
Yeah. Giselle Ovami. Giselle Ovami. Giselle Ovami.
You know, we got it, John. We got it.
It doesn't work. Rhoda Good.
Does it?
Okay, if you put an E on the good, so it's kind of like, it looks like it. Yeah,
that's good. Sorry. Wilma Fingerdo.
Oh, it can't help it, can he, Dave?
No, it just has got to be
at some point,
you
have to get a finger in.
Yeah.
That was especially for Dave, that one. And finally, this is really shit, but Regina Lynn Spection. Thought it was crap.
Grief. Oh, do you know what's really bad is that I sat down to try and think of some, and I don't know where my head was because I got it completely the wrong way around, and I started writing names of women who were trying to pretend that they were men. In the romance world, I got it completely backwards, but I was using the same formula, thinking if you're a woman and you wanted to convince the world you're a man, you'd go for a real man's name.
Yeah, surely.
Like Bruce Chapmanson. You've got three.
I love the way he's got like two endings to his name. That's good.
Well, you've got three male, you know, chap, man, son.
Ton.
All
I think
in
you need
one
a ton
name,
on the end.
Chap, man, son, ton. Yeah. Oh, Brian Ladd. That's quite a good name.
Quite literal, aren't you? So with you just...
Yeah. He's a bloke. Ladd. Yeah.
Or Kevin Penis. Where's everybody gone?